This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Welcome to World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe one country at a time. A little team tonight. Dean, hello.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm really, really well. Now, there is arguably greater visibility now for trans rights than ever before in our history. But does that make a difference if you're in a small town in Midwestern USA?
What is it like growing up feeling different in the American heartland when men are supposedly men?
How difficult is it to make the decision to commence transitioning?
And how do you go about fending off discrimination and finding your own voice? For a personal view on growing up different in Middle America, tonight we are joined in the studio by Michelle, a trans woman from St. Louis, Missouri in small town USA, and also a Joy presenter that you'd know from Trans Positions.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
And we're starting off this week in Finland. So Finland has finally finished making tweaks to its same-sex marriage legislation, but couples still have to wait another year before they can marry. So way
it's
back,
been going on for years.
It has been, and, you know, well, we can't comment. We're dragging our feet even more than Finland are. But way back in November 2014, the Finnish Parliament passed a citizens' initiative on same-sex marriage. That's right, a citizens' initiative.
They so that's where the citizens, if you get a petition with more than about, I think it's about 50,000 or 60,000 names, the Parliament has to address your issues.
Yeah, they're smart people, those Finns. Anyway, a tight vote of 105 to 92. Now, the country's president signed the initiative into law back in February 2015, blah, 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 blah. It's been going on and on. And MPs have finally passed the measure, which is hoped to be the last puzzle piece required, by 106 votes to 42.
But
yes.
That doesn't mean you can get married tomorrow.
Not
yet. In fact, March 2017 is when you'll be able to walk down the aisle.
That's correct. Yeah. But we have some positive news coming from...
in Cambodia. In fact, we should be getting a bit nervous because Joy is getting some welcome competition.
Indeed we are. The Ministry of Information says it doesn't that sound Orwellian, is working with the LGBT rights groups to create a regular radio program that discusses our issues with the aim of making society more welcoming.
In fact, the Minister for Information, working with the local NGOs, is saying that LGBT people are a part of society and therefore they should have their own radio show. A survey in December last year indicated about a third of LGBT respondents said they were completely closeted, with many stuck in straight relationships.
Nearly half of the straight respondents reported they would reject their own child if they revealed themselves as LGBT.
Across to the Czech Republic now, where a public health department has launched criminal investigations against 30 HIV-positive men who it alleges had unprotected sex in violating the country's law that make it a crime to expose somebody else to HIV. Now, the law itself is not... it's a fairly common law in many countries that if you deliberately expose somebody to HIV, then you can be accused. But this one's got a bit of a twist.
Yeah, including in 31 states in the United States. This is what's been described as a public health witch hunt. There are no complainants in the case, nor any evidence anyone has contracted HIV from the 30 men under investigation. The sole evidence against the men is that they contracted other sexually transmitted infections, like gonorrhea and syphilis, after testing HIV positive, which the health department contends is proof they had condomless sex in violation of the law. It's an outrage. We should get Dean Beck in here to thump the table and carry on. But
if
understandably
there's no evidence
so.
And nobody's actually complaining about it, why is this being brought?
Yeah, well, you think you're outraged now. The head of the public health department is a complete moron. Her name's Zagenda Jabrova.
Editorialising there.
Look, honestly, where do I start? So she responded to the Czech AIDS Help Society's criticism of the investigation by saying, "This campaign questioning our practices is clearly intended to assert the rights of minority at the expense of the rights of the majority, i.e. in particular the right to health, irrespective of who and how threatens that health. It gets better. She alleged it's a ploy by the organisation to get access to PrEP, such as Truvada, which she describes as, and I quote, relatively expensive drugs that promiscuous people would use before having unprotected sex.
Judgment stick, judgment stick, judgment
stick. Gets better. We consider attempts to create a privileged group that would be excluded from generally defined responsibilities very dangerous. Yeah, we're not allowed to say what we'd like to say, but, you know, you can gather what we'd like to say.
Across to Cameroon, where LGBTI people living in one of the world's worst places to be gay have pleaded with Pope Francis to save them from the priests who have implemented a zero-tolerance policy on homosexuality. So it is illegal to be gay in Cameroon and punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Alternatives Cameroon, which is the local gay group that we've spoken to there, has issued a warning call after priests at one of the Episcopal churches there unanimously decided in January to oppose any views on gay people. And they said the Catholics must treat homosexuality as the abominable thing that goes against nature.
On the positive side,
we need
though,
some good news.
Yeah, well, let's go to Canada, where Justin Trudeau will become the first sitting Canadian Prime Minister to march in the Toronto Pride Parade.
I think I'm going to move to Canada.
Yeah.
Is this guy, like, I think he's sort of seen President Obama and thought, hey, I can outdo you. Tremendously. He's going to lead or certainly march in the Pride Parade in July this year in Toronto, the first PM to do so.
And in brief, in yet another restriction on the Indonesian gay community, Tumblr access has been blocked in Indonesia until the social media site agrees to prevent pornography and LGBT content from being accessed.
The Italian Prime Minister has announced he is ready to call a confidence vote to push through a controversial gay civil unions bill.
In Egypt, a doctor has been sentenced to 1 year in prison with labour by a Cairo court on the accusation of practicing homosexual activity.
And the Indian state of Tamil Nadu has appointed the nation's first transgender woman to the police force.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Couple of messages coming in. People like Sally Goldner should be acknowledged for working hard on transgender rights in Australia, enjoying the show. Paul says he's glad he didn't have to pronounce condomless sex. It is a hard one, I have to say.
It wasn't easy, I have to say.
You'll have to practice for next week. There's your homework. One more coming in on 0427 Joy 949. What a cool man is Justin Trudeau. Let's hope it inspires our own Prime Minister. Do you think he'll get booed by the public? Thanks, Florence. So this is to do with Mardi Gras, we're assuming.
If he shows up, if his party lets him show up.
So it's not confirmed. The opposition leader, Bill Shorten, has confirmed he's going to be at Mardi Gras. Joy 94.9 has confirmed we're going to be at Mardi Gras. We haven't heard from the Prime Minister yet. That's a good question, because you would think there'd be people who'd want to cheer him for being the first Prime Minister to march, but there's going to be a lot of people who won't be cheering because of the plebiscite. Now, in the studio with us is our wonderful guest tonight, Michelle. Welcome, Michelle.
Good evening, boys. How are you?
We are wonderful, and all the better for having you with us. Now, you're no stranger to Joy, but we're going to sort of, you're on the other side of the microphone tonight.
I am, and it's quite interesting. I've gotten the full treatment tonight. I got the bottle of water. I'm feeling special. So.
It's every announcer's dream. The show is all about you.
It's not often, but I do get interviews here and there where you do get to be, you know, on the other side and occasionally, but it's been a while, so this will be good.
Now, you're from a small town, fairly small town in America.
Yeah, it's a big small town. For
Melburnians, what's the sort of, how does that compare to Melbourne?
Maybe more like, maybe closer to like Adelaide.
Okay.
A bit smaller, nothing too big. A lot of churches.
Very much like Adelaide.
Yeah, very much like Adelaide.
When you were growing up there, what was life like for you growing up in small town America?
Growing up in small town America wasn't exactly easy. Look, I had been dealing with gender dysphoria, thinking back on it, since I was probably 4 years old, that I can remember my earliest thoughts on it.
Wow.
My big thing was always sneaking into my mom's makeup and doing my face up and I remember being younger and wishing and wanting, and I had to do my best to actually give and live the life of a man as best as I could. My stepdad was quite harsh and quite rough, and you know, man's a man, and you know, suits and ties and clean shaven. So it was really a forced stereotype life.
Did they, when you said you were sneaking in and trying the makeup, did they know that, or were you?
Oh God, no.
You were totally secretive.
No, not totally secretive. I mean, my stepdad would have tanned my hide for that. So. And I remember their threats when I was younger, going, oh, you know, you want to go to art class, you want to do home ec and cooking and whatever, well, I'll dress you as a girl and send you to school and watch you get beat up. And it's like, can I please?
So, gee, but that must have been really hard.
Yeah, it was very hard. Very hard.
And did that sort of instill a fear in you?
It did, because at that time, the only thing I had access to was Jerry Springer and tabloids. And, you know, you're seeing tabloids with, you know, Eddie Murphy getting caught with a transsexual and in something like The Sun or The National Enquirer or something like that. Or, you know, Jerry Springer is my transsexual midget wife who really is a man, and, you know, all this kind of weird stuff that, and you go, wow, I can't be that.
Yeah, I'm not that. Therefore, I pull back.
I remember even having friends who were part of classes who were gay, but the teachers would put them down. And the teachers would say, oh, it's wrong to be gay. It's wrong this. I would encourage underage sex before I'd encourage gay sex. And
well, that's something.
Well, of course. And
is that,
so
is that progress?
But I went and I remember having one friend who was gay and used to go out and drag. And I remember going to his bedroom and almost coming out to him when I was like 15. But I didn't, because I was so afraid of somebody finding out or getting in trouble or getting hurt or something like that.
At what point were you able to put a name on this feeling of difference that you had?
I remember when I was married the first time. So I've been married now twice. And I was about maybe 22. And
very young to get married.
Very young. See, over there, you either go to university or you get married and have a job. And so I didn't have the money to go to university. I mean, to go over there, you know, to go to normal university is like 11 grand a semester. So
wow.
it's really full on to go to university. And there's no hicks. There's no to get loans. You're already pretty much in debt when you finish. So I was working. I mean, I'm working IT for, God, how long now? Probably 18 years, 19 years. And I remember one day I had a stash of clothes and a wig and stuff. And I remember trying to go and I was talking to some people online, trying to find some people to ask questions about. And I had to come up with a name. And out of the blue, the first name that came to my mind was Michelle. And that's when the first time I could put a name to it, going, this is becoming too real. I don't understand what this is. I'm not gay. So why am I feeling this way?
We're going to get into sort of how you went on your journey of transitioning. Just wanted, you mentioned the city of churches, or, you know, a city full of churches. How present was religion in your life as a younger person? Was it a dominant factor?
Or? It was a dominant factor. My parents were, well, my stepdad was more of a, we call it C&E, Christmas and Easter kind of person. He only come on those two holidays. My mom, every Sunday, went with my grandmother to our church. And we grew up evangelical, which is like Diet Catholic. And we, it was every Sunday. My grandmother always had, you know, influence in what we were doing and whatever. When I got married, I converted to Catholicism, and I became a youth minister in the Catholic Church with my first wife for a couple of years.
Wow, you really jumped in with both feet.
I did.
You'll be very surprised, or perhaps not, by comments today from the Missouri Catholic Archbishop, who has urged the parishioners within the diocese to cut ties with the Girl Scouts, because the Girl Scouts apparently have shown acceptance to LGBTI people. Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised. It's very unfortunate, because the problem is when you're coming out as trans, especially as a child, you need help. You need a community. Even as an adult, you need a community. And when they're trying to strip a community of acceptance from people who feel like they belong, well, that's completely wrong. You know, we're not trying to go and promote anything other than a community and acceptance amongst these young kids.
Talking trans issues in small town America with Michelle, and we've got lots more questions about your story coming right up.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You're listening to Worldwide Wave. Lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
Now, message in, can you be both religious and trans? Would love to see more people of faith in the community. Great interview. Thanks for that message from one of our regulars there. Religious and trans?
I think you can be religious and anything, to be honest. I know people who are Islam and gay, and you know, even though they hide their faith, their feelings of who they are as a person, I mean, it doesn't matter what your faith is.
But it's fair to say that you've had a bit of a rough trot with religion.
I have had a rough trot with religion. Look, I remember coming home from DJing late at night, because then, like I said, it was Midwest, and from between 18 and 23 with my first wife's, or my brother-in-law with my first wife, I used to DJ in clubs. And in order to go and convert to Catholicism, I had to go through all these classes and stuff. But I knew more about the religion than anybody else really did in the room. So I'd be coming in smelling like alcohol and cigarettes and whatever, and flopping down and going, yeah, Moses this and Noah that and da 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 da. And I knew everything about it, because I'd studied it since I was a young child. And
did you have an emotional connection with religion, or was it just something that you'd learned and
it was
you
just something?
To fit in?
It was something that I learned that I tried to fit in, because that's pretty much the life, what it's like in St. Louis and Midwest. You go to church every Sunday. It's just what you do. It was a bit of a cultural difference coming here and not being and doing that. But before I left St. Louis, because when I was doing youth ministry, when I was at the Catholic Church there, we, unfortunately, when I was going through divorce at that time, I was also struggling with my gender identity and my sexuality, trying to understand who and what I was.
You had a lot going on.
I had a lot going on. And because in the church basically had said to me that, they pulled me aside and they said to me that, look, unfortunately, because of your, you know, the things you are struggling with, and because of your divorce, it doesn't align with our beliefs, and we need you to step away, and because we feel it will influence the children in their decisions with their life.
There's no room at the inn for you, Michelle.
I know.
did that, I mean, were you devastated by that?
Or? I was, because I was seeking...
It was your community.
It was seeking stage. Community at that stage. And I, my family and I weren't talking. We still don't talk, really. And it was always off and on. And I had really nowhere else to go. And I was trying to find a home, trying to find secure, you know, a community of people to connect with.
Was there any sort of LGBT community in Missouri?
There was. I remember when I was dabbling in cross-dressing and going out and doing a bit of amateur drag and going and getting up on stage and trying to figure
were
out what
you
this
good
was.
Drag?
No, well, no, I was horrible. My problem is I didn't do all the big frocky stuff. I was always more the glamour stuff, more of the stuff you see in RuPaul. Like they just do more nice. Glamour dresses and really big makeup, and that's what it was drag for me. I didn't like the whole Muppet Show thing. But I remember going out with some girlfriends, and a few of them actually were getting stoned, getting drunk, picking up guys, big hair, big whatever. And I'm going, this isn't aligned with me.
You're a nice Midwestern girl.
I was a good girl. And so I try to be a good girl now, but I went, and I remember going to some of the gay clubs actually in St. Louis, and you'd have to go to like this industrial estate where it was hidden behind everything else. And you go in down, and it was like all these stainless steel walls. It was dark. Some old man came up to me with an icy pole and like asked me if I wanted to lick it. And I felt dirty. And so then you'd see people downstairs and like it looked horrible. And it just wasn't right. I just thought, this isn't what I wanted.
It wasn't proper and
well, it wasn't you.
It wasn't me. I didn't want CD yet. It wasn't there looking for a pickup. I was there just trying to figure out who I was. Like, let's go out for coffee and have a chat. You know, like.
So what brought you from small town Missouri to relatively big town Melbourne?
Well, I ended up meeting my second wife online. And at that time, I ended up purging a lot of my life of what I was doing. I wasn't talking to my family at the time. I went and I was sleeping on the floor. I had a doona cover and a blanket, or a doona cover and a pillow. I had really nothing. We had met, and I'd gone through this phase of shaved my head, started going to the gym, getting back into being a really, you know, blokey bloke. And I said, you know what? Life here in St. Louis, there's just nothing left here for me. Things have just completely fizzled apart. I can't figure out what I'm doing here. I want to get back on track. I want a 2.5 picket fence life. I'm going to Melbourne. And I remember when people tell me, like, oh, what are you going to Melbourne for? You know, if you want to go to Australia, you go to Sydney. That's the tourist thing. And then I was reading about it, but what they said online was, Yes, Sydney's the tourist place, but if you want to eat well, you go to Melbourne.
Do you remember your first experience of getting off the plane and you know, how did it feel like?
The first experience coming here, I remember getting on the plane and the guy came up to me and he goes, "Oh, you know, would you like a beer or something to drink?" And I'm going, "Yeah, sure. How much is it?" And he goes, "No, mate. It's you know, it's free." And I'm going, "Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. I'll have a Budweiser or something." And he goes, nah, mate. We don't serve that here." And he pops open a VB and gives it to me. And I remember taking a swig and going, I'm going, "What's this shit?" So, but I drank it and I slept really well. So, but I remember coming and walking around to the shops and stuff, because coming to Melbourne was, everyone says in America it's a melting pot, but in Australia it's so much more of a melting pot. You get people off the boat as well. I'm walking through Coles and Woolies and there's people speaking over here and whatever over here, and I'm going, "Where the hell am I?" Like, it was completely just a culture shock.
Is that coming, is that because you've come from small town America as opposed to bigger cities, though? Is that a small town versus big town?
I think so, definitely. In small town, like in St. Louis, it's very much white and black. It's still very segregated in my hometown. You heard in the news, you guys have heard about things like Ferguson and the riots and stuff that happened.
Right.
That's my hometown.
Wow. We're glad to hear. Now, tell us about your process of transitioning. When you were first starting down this journey, how difficult was it to find information? How did you go about that?
So difficult. I remember struggling a bit a couple of years ago when my first wife and I had separated. I was trying to understand what was wrong with me. I was sort of feeling that dysphoria, feeling that urge. I was kind of coasting towards that, but I came back because I was a parent. I just had my oldest daughter at the time, and I'm going, "What am I doing? I'm a man. I'm a dad. I need to be there for my kids. I need to work on things with my wife. You know, work on it." Unfortunately, our relationship fell apart. And when the relationship fell apart, I said, "Look, I need to look into finding out what I'm dealing with. Why am I dealing with this? Why do I have this urge the way I do?" And I went online, and it was really hard to find information. I remember going into some different rooms and there were cross-dressers and admirers and people in lingerie. And I'm going, "Please, for the love of God, can I just meet somebody who just can talk to me in a normal conversation, not about pantyhose, not about hormones. I just want to talk to somebody and have a normal conversation." And ended up happening. Met somebody at a chat. They directed me in the right place. And for me, when it came to transition, I really went slow. I took my time and I wanted people to travel with me and not get left behind in the transition.
Was that a hard decision or an exciting decision? I guess, what were you feeling as you were, you know, starting on the journey?
I remember being at work, and I had a really bad conversation with somebody on the phone because I was doing a lot of whistleblowing work at the time with different companies. And I was feeling really stressed. My wife and I had split. I'm sleeping at a friend's place. And all of a sudden, so I'm the kind of person, my brain is constantly just working. Everything went blank. I just, all of a sudden, I just felt void. And I remember going, "Something's not right." And I'd already been dealing with some of these feelings and going, "I need to talk to somebody. Something's not right. I feel broken." And a lot of the thoughts were still in my mind from that, and reached out to Beyond Blue and a few other places. And I was scared, and I had this heavy, heavy, heavy pit in my stomach. Think about when you want to cry and you're on that verge of crying and right on the tipping in that edge. And it's like that heaviness, but you can't cry. But it's at that point, right in that, like it's going over a cliff, and it's just that heaviness right in your gut. And I said, I knew I needed to talk to somebody about this or things aren't going to be good.
We're speaking with Michelle about small town America and trans rights. You're on Joy 94.9 Worldwide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Otan Batar from LGBT Center of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on Worldwide Wave.
We touched very, very briefly on family, and you said you hadn't been really connecting with your family. Is that as a result of your transitioning?
I think it's been a result. over the years due to transition, or just who I am as a person, who I identify as a person, and my struggles. Growing up, I was told I need to be thinking a certain way, believing a certain way. And I remember conversations with my mother when I was younger, talking about dating somebody of, say, another ethnic background. And I said, "Well, Mom, why would it be the problem if I dated somebody black?" And she goes, "Cultures don't mix. They just don't. Like, it's just wrong. It's wrong." And we had this massive argument over it. And I'm going, "Well, what's wrong with it? Like, they're just a person." So, you know, we had similar conversations then around culture backgrounds as we do now about LGBT. And
is there any degree of acceptance? Will they call you Michelle?
No. My mom used to pop in and out here and there. But unfortunately, our last conversation, my mom called me a faggot freak show and told me that she should have aborted me. And she constantly, and every time she's like, you know, what we're doing, it's gay, Danny. It's gay. It's gay. And I'm going, "Mom, my name is Michelle now. Your name is Danny. It's this, and you're, it's gay." And I'm going, "Okay, Mom, no worries." And she just blasted me. She goes, "You know, you think those people are so much more important. You think that they're just, you know," she really just is against anything gay, anything LGBT. My sister stopped talking to me. And she honestly was introducing me as, "Here's my brother, Daniel. I'm like, "Julie, you're introducing me to people, and I don't look like a man, and my name's Michelle. Like, my name's legally Michelle. You need to, you know, please." And it just, unfortunately, was, we just parted ways.
And have you found a new family in Australia?
I have started. Coming here to Joy has really started building me a new family. After splitting up with my wife, my second wife, I pretty much lost everything. My children and I, we've got an amazing relationship. My daughters love my little ducklings. They follow me everywhere. they correct people. Somebody, you know, mispronounces my name or does the wrong gender, and they're like, "Her name is Michelle." My oldest put a 40-year-old man in his place. So except when we're out getting ice cream or out doing, when you're going through like Kohl's and they give the freebies away, and the lady comes up, she goes, "Oh, hey, Mom, can the girls have some free samples?" And my kids looked at me ready to go and correct her, and I'm going, "Just roll with it.
Yeah, just take the
it's freebies, man."
Do you consider yourself an advocate?
I do actually consider myself an advocate.
Is that something that came easily or surprised you?
I think it's going to surprise me. When I first came out, if you told me when I first came out that I'd be sitting here in a studio, hosting a radio show, putting together events across the country, and speaking at Pride Melbourne and doing the commentary, I was asked to do Mardi Gras as well. If you told me that that's what I'd be doing when I first came out, I've looked at you and laughed at you.
Yep.
When I came out, I remember having nothing in my cupboards. I couldn't find work. Nobody would give me work. I went to recruiters, and recruiters actually turned me down and said, "Sorry, just not a cultural fit being trans in this workplace."
This is here in Australia?
Yeah, here in Australia. And I was actually turned away. And they said, "Either detransition or figure out what you're doing, because it's just not going to work. No one will understand this." And so I went and... I eventually got involved here at Joy and created a whole new group, a new family. And
there's been a great increase in visibility of trans issues and trans people. Some people, well, there's a chunk of the population who only get their views of the world through media, what they see on media. Are some of those, and I guess I'm thinking of Caitlyn Jenner, is any exposure good exposure?
I think any exposure is good exposure at this point. Caitlin, she looks like a nutbag. Some of the things she says, she puts her foot in her mouth quite often. She's toned down. You haven't really heard much from her lately, but her coming out actually created quite a bit of exposure. When I first came out and we first started running the show, you constantly hear things about murders, etc. But she actually has created quite a bit of exposure from folks who don't understand trans issues, going, "Oh, everyone's always asking about Caitlin. That's always the first question." In the news, the media, there's so much now. Things with children, things with whatever. And I'm getting that position now where I'm reaching out and starting to talk to the kids help the kids, be more of a role model to kids, because we need more role models in Australia. They need to be able to say somebody and say, hey, this person did it. I want to be just like them.
If you could, if your younger self was sitting here beside you now and you could say something to them, what would it be?
Oh, God. just hang in there. Just hang in there. You'll get there. Don't change anything. Just go with the flow.
Thank you so much for being so open and sharing your story with us tonight, Michelle. You are on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
A huge thank you again to our guest tonight, Michelle from Missouri, now in Melbourne. A few messages on Facebook as well. Lillian, Shani, Scott, Doug, Sylvia and Claire and a heap more. W3Joy, like us, we'll send you news all week. We'll catch you next week on the World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.